You're listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Materials or items read on Ayers LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Hello, I'm Michael Piotrasz. Welcome to another recording of articles from Popular Science Magazine, a presentation of Ayers LA. This week's articles include, at 1 minute, prehistoric Japan was home to cave lions, not tigers. At 5 minutes, 25 seconds, can't stop humming that tune? Thank math. And finally, at 12 minutes, biologists discover gene that may determine good and bad dads. Let's get to it. This first article is from the Environment, Animals, Wildlife section and is entitled, Prehistoric Japan was home to cave lions, not tigers, written by Andrew Paul, published February 17, 2026. Fossil evidence shows a case of mistaken big cat identity. This article begins with a photo. Its caption reads, Artistic reconstruction of a late Pleistocene cave lion overlooking Mount Fuji, Japan. Present-day Japan may see its fair share of bears, but the island's big cat populations are long gone. Between 129,000 and 11,700 years ago, temporary land bridges allowed the ancient predators to migrate between mainland Asia and the islands. Paleobiologists have long believed tigers were the primary cats to make this trek. But recently analyzed evidence published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences suggests a different timeline. Quote, Our findings challenge the prevailing view that tigers once took refuge in Japan and that cave lion distribution was limited to the Russian Far East and Northeast China, unquote, explained the study's authors. Quote, These findings provide evidence that lions, rather than tigers, colonized the Japanese archipelago during the late Pleistocene, unquote. The earliest big cats got their start in Africa around 6.4 million years ago, but it would take another 5.4 million years for the first lions to travel into northern Eurasia. While their tiger cousins largely migrated toward Eurasia's southern regions, the predators still occasionally crossed paths in the lion-tiger transition belt, an area spanning portions of the Middle East through Central Asia into eastern Russia, where the two intermingled. Amid these late Pleistocene migrations, Earth also experienced glacial periods that lowered sea levels and revealed land bridges linking Asia's lion-tiger transition belt to the Japanese archipelago. Fossil records suggest that many tigers took advantage of these pathways, but they are not without some instances of mistaken identity. According to the study's authors, researchers previously cataloged these big cat fossil discoveries based on morphological evidence instead of more reliable DNA data. To double-check these past conclusions, the team re-examined a set of fossil specimens using genetic sequencing and radiocarbon dating. Although many examples are now in poor condition, 5 yielded enough information to facilitate lineage profiling. In each case, the tiger in question instead possessed molecular information aligning with a now extinct species of cave lion, Panthera spelaea. Even more striking, the team didn't find any tiger evidence in Japan from the late Pleistocene. Radiocarbon analysis of one specimen indicates that it lived around 31,060 years ago, but researchers believe the first cave lions possibly arrived as far back as 72,700 years ago. It now appears the big cats also thrived on the islands for at least 20,000 years after their species went extinct in Eurasia. Researchers believe the reason for their prolonged survival is what brought them to the archipelago in the first place, the land bridges. Quote, "This extended survival of cave lions may reflect Japan's unique paleogeographic history," unquote, they wrote, adding that, quote, "This finding extends the known range of cave lions in East Asia and refines our understanding of how far south the lion-tiger transition belt shifted during this period," unquote. This next article is from the science section and is entitled, "Can't Stop Humming That Tune? Think Math." Written by Andrew Paul, published February 19, 2026. A lot goes into the successful earworms, including mathematical symmetry. This article begins with a photo. A professional male musician creates new song for music album by playing synthesizer in studio. Top view at angle on head of bald man in headphones, who sits at microphone and presses keys of synthesizer. Its caption reads, "Mathematical analysis of musicality dates at least as far back as ancient Greece." While Super Bowl 60 is over, the big game still echoes in the minds of many viewers. Not the Seattle Seahawks' offensive coordination, or the New England Patriots' lack thereof, mind you, but all those annoyingly catchy commercial jingles. It's not your fault if a 30-second advertisement spot's melodic hook continues to keep you up at night, however. Pop culture's most successful earworms are rarely a fluke. They're often carefully crafted to maximize memorability. Today, you can even pursue a bachelor's degree in commercial songwriting. The mathematical study of tones dates at least as far back as the 5th century BCE Pythagorean philosophers of ancient Greece, but there's still a lot to learn about the numbers behind the notes. At the University of Waterloo in Ontario, Canada, computational mechanics researchers recently examined musical melodies from an algebraic standpoint and found that there is an unsung component to many popular tunes: symmetry. Their findings were presented at the 6th AMMCS International Conference on Applied Mathematics, Modeling, and Computational Science. Quote, "Our goal was to build a clear mathematical bridge between abstract algebra and the experience of listening to music," unquote, said study co-author Olga Ibragimova. Quote, "When we think of melodies as shapes we can transform, it becomes clear that composers have been using these kinds of symmetries intuitively for centuries," unquote. Ibragimova and her colleagues primarily relied on group theory, a subset of mathematics focused on transformations and mirrored patterns. They first assigned each of the chromatic scale's 12 notes a corresponding 1 to 12 numerical placeholder, then broke down various melodies into discrete note groups. This allowed them to express tunes as algebraic notation. The team then analyzed how some of the most common techniques affect overall song structures. Among these were melodic concepts like inversion, flipping a tune, transposition, shifting it up or down scales, retrograding, reversal, and translation, movement over time. They focused on two primary symmetry types, tonal and positional. With those concepts in mind, they were able to create formulas that illustrate how a melody can evolve while either retaining a foundational structure or purposefully altering it in predictable patterns. Quote, "What surprised us is how cleanly the mathematics separates tonal structure from positional structure," unquote, explained systems design engineer and study co-author Christopher Nahaniv. Quote, "This duality helps us identify patterns that are not obvious by ear or by looking at a musical score. It also means we can systematically construct and count all possible symmetric melodies for a given length," unquote. Ibragimova and Nahaniv believe their work may help composers with conceptualizing new music possibilities, as well as pave the way for new methods of songwriting and research. But while this may help some artists, others continue to credit the ineffable qualities of music composition. Quote, "Whenever the goal is just to write something that's very catchy, and is going to get stuck in people's heads. That's like the least I think about it," unquote, songwriter Nick Lutzko tells Popular Science. "It's kind of the first thing that comes to my head, and I go with it. I don't overanalyze or overthink it. It's not intellectual whatsoever," unquote. Lutzko has multiple full-length albums of his own, as well as numerous comedy releases that have garnered a dedicated international fan base. In 2022, he won a Webby Award for his musical work on an Old Spice ad. You may even have one of his songs stuck in your head right now. He penned not one, but two of those absurdly memorable jingles that ran during this year's Super Bowl. As is the case in many corporate ad campaigns, Lutzko was one of multiple songwriters to receive pre-written lyrics with a prompt to put them to music. Quote, "The first time I read those lyrics, the melody came to me as I was reading them," unquote, he explains. Quote, "I know people talk about algebraic equations and the math or science behind songwriting, but to me it's almost supernatural. I think it's because it comes from a place of familiarity," unquote. At the same time, Lutzko doesn't fault anyone who turns to the mathematics of music for their inspiration. Remember the commercial songwriting major route? Lutzko took it himself. Quote, "It doesn't irk me. I went to school for it," unquote, he says. Quote, "But I've always been more interested in creative expression, like science was always my worst subject in school. It's just not how my brain works. I just want to have fun and not think about it too much," unquote. This final article is from the Science, Biology, Evolution section and is entitled, "Biologists Discover Gene That May Determine Good and Bad Dads," written by Andrew Paul, published February 18, 2026. Social cues and surprising genetics may affect mammal fathers. This article begins with a photo, an African striped mouse and pups. Its caption reads, "Paternal care is rare in mammals, but male African striped mice can be doting fathers. A new Princeton University study reveals that social circumstances and genetics drive African striped males to either care for pups or attack them. Most mammals grow up in single-parent homes. It's estimated that over 95% of the planet's nearly 6,000 known mammalian species rely almost exclusively on mothers to nurture and raise their offspring. But even when dads stick around, it's not always smooth sailing. Fatherhood can range from attentive to caring to downright violent behaviors. But why this spectrum exists remains largely a mystery to evolutionary biologists. Take the African striped mouse, Rhabdomys pumilio, for instance. Males can exhibit diverse responses to their young after becoming fathers. Particularly caring mice dads will groom their pups and even insulate them with their bellies against inclement weather. Meanwhile, other fathers may ignore or hurt a litter's weaker siblings. Although a simplified example, the striped mouse can serve as a proxy for other mammals, including humans. Knowing this, researchers at Princeton University recently investigated the neurological underpinnings of rodent fatherhood. Their new study, published today in the journal Nature, indicates that a specific molecular group inside the brain may largely determine how dads react to their progeny. To learn more, the team recorded the neural activity of male striped mice when placed in various situations, both with and without pups. They soon noticed that neural activity in the brain's medial preoptic area, MPOA, increased whenever the males encountered a young mouse. These MPOA spikes weren't uniform, however. Higher activity in the region corresponded with helpfulness, while lower recordings aligned with hostility. Although this isn't the first time that biologists noted MPOA's relation to parenting, past research largely linked it to rodent females after becoming mothers. Quote, But in the case of these males, it's not pregnancy or even parenthood that transforms their brains, unquote. Forrest Rogers, a neuroscientist and study co-author, said in a statement, quote, bachelors can be just as capable of caring as experienced dads, unquote. Rogers and his colleagues noticed MPOA was not the only area that tied to parenting. Surprisingly, the more caring mice dads also displayed lower levels of a gene called agouti. This gene is typically known for its influence on metabolism and skin pigmentation, not fatherhood. Quote, discovering this previously unknown role in the brain for parenting behavior was exciting, unquote, said Rogers. After finding this new link, researchers wanted to know what conditions influenced agouti gene expression in the MPOA. Contrary to what one may initially assume, they found that solitary males possessed low levels of agouti compared to males who lived in groups. Especially high levels also sometimes muted neural activity in the MPOA. Artificially boosting agouti through gene therapy reinforced these observations, too. Male mice who were previously nurturing became less interested or even volatile towards pups if they produced more agouti. As a remedy, the team later relocated some of these males from communal to solitary living conditions. This naturally lowered their agouti levels, making them more interested in the mice pups again. Quote, our findings point to agouti as a potential evolutionary mechanism that allows animals to integrate environmental information, such as social competition or population density, and adjust the balance between self-preservation and investment in offspring, unquote, added study co-author and neuroscientist Catherine Pena. Forrest, Pena, and their collaborators are still interested in examining which specific environmental factors may influence agouti levels in mammals like striped mice and humans. At the same time, they warned against viewing their findings as a one-size-fits-all solution for parenting behaviors. Instead, they hope to help other researchers identify factors that may contribute to higher risks of issues like father figure neglect or abuse. Quote, parenting is a complex trait. We're not suggesting that you can take a pill to become a better parent or that struggles with parenting reflect some molecular deficiency, unquote, said Pena. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's material from Popular Science Magazine. I'm Michael Piotrasch, and I'll be back soon with more interesting articles. Thank you for listening.